On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York, and the host of On the Ground. Have you wanted to start a newsletter but never thought that you had the bandwidth for it? Well, on this episode of On the Ground, you're going to get practical advice from a panel of folks who have actually done it. You will learn how they started, how they continue, and how they promote their successful NGO newsletter. And then, of course, we have news you can use, upcoming April events you don't want to miss. And finally, you'll hear from the leader of one of the most successful NGOs, an Argentinian NGO, about why she thinks we're at the tipping point right now and a real turning point in the world and how NGOs are at the center. It will both inspire you and give you an important warning. Have you considered having a newsletter, but you were concerned that your NGO just does not have the bandwidth to create a newsletter? Well, we're here to prove you wrong, that you absolutely can have a newsletter. It could be extremely powerful, extremely creative, and even the centerpiece of some of your promotion for your own mission. So to set the stage, I'm bringing on Cynthia Stewin, who is the main representative in the United Nations on behalf of the International Federation on Aging. She's chair of the Committee on Aging New York, and part of that is my subcommittee that I sit on, the Subcommittee on Communications for the NGO Committee on Aging. And what she's done is help our Communications Committee create a newsletter and used it in a very, very creative ways. Thank you for being with us today, Cynthia.
Thank you for having me.
So before we talk about the newsletter itself, just tell us a little bit about the NGO, because not everyone is familiar. We now have 1,600 plus NGOs in GNEC. Yours is one of them. Tell us a little bit about the NGO.
Certainly. The NGO, which for your audience means the non-governmental organizations, and we are the Committee on Aging in New York at the UN. We have a counterpart, Committee on Aging in Geneva, and a counterpart, Committee on Aging in Vienna. Our work is to raise the world's awareness of the opportunities and challenges of global aging. And we advocate within the UN and all of its 193 member states to ensure that older persons are recognized.
Now, this is a big job, and you're hoping, I know, to have a convention on the rights of older persons. Those listening who have been to IDOP, the International Day of Older Persons, knows that this particular NGO does a lot of work to promote that and create it. But there's something new on the horizon, and that is our newsletter. Cynthia will give you the website right now, and you'll see several editions of the newsletter already. So first, where can they go to read the newsletter?
Okay. The New York website is www.ngocoa-newyork.org.
Yes. Now, let's take a little bit of a deeper dive. First of all, how do you, as really the head of the organization, contribute to this? I happen to know because I help edit it. But one of the important jobs you have is to cull out some of the really, there's numerous events and information and send it, make sure it's in the website. But that does not sound like an easy job. How overwhelming is that? I think people who are thinking about a newsletter really want to know that.
Well, it's a matter of monitoring for us the United Nations calendar. And once you've been around for a few years, you understand the cycles. There are various functional commissions, for example, that meet. Let's start with February. We've just concluded the Commission on Social Development. And this year, that commission did the review and appraisal of MIPA, the Madrid International Plan of Action on Aging, which is 20 years old. So, of course, it needs to be reviewed and updated. And the regional commissions of the United Nations, they're divided into five regions of the world, were all at the United Nations to bring their regional work on the review and appraisal of MIPA. So, well, our newsletter was very useful for that purpose. For example, as I was mentioning, the Commission on Social Development met this month. So I asked the Commission on, our subcommittee on communications that produces this wonderful newsletter to make sure that we really covered the Commission on Social Development, the upcoming Commission on the Status of Women, and getting ready for the open-ended working group on aging in April. Well, at this recent Commission on Social Development, as I said, the regional commission representatives were in from all five regions. The exception was Africa. Their regional commission director could not make it, but participated via virtual. But I convened a breakfast meeting with key members of our executive committee to meet with the regional commissions, because ultimately our goal is to protect the human rights of older persons. I actually printed out the newsletter and shared it with them, because sometimes everyone gets so many things in their email that it can get lost. Well, it was very, very useful for all of them to have. And they all four of the ones that were there in person, told me how useful it was to have it. They had no idea of the background work that our committee, and particularly subcommittee on communications, had no idea of the amount of work and research that we were putting together. So the newsletter, thanks to Martha Bile, who chairs the subcommittee on communications and is the overall editor, understands the importance of briefing our members and producing articles that relate to the forthcoming themes of the United Nations calendar.
Well, this is what I want to bring out for everybody listening. This is a very, very powerful and useful tool, and it's only up to your imagination and the person on your team who can bring it to the right folks. And hello, hello, hello. We're back. And as promised, we have a threesome, a wonderful panel that's going to set you straight on how a newsletter really can be done. I know that if you're an NGO or a nonprofit, your bandwidth is pretty stretched. I don't want you to be afraid of taking on this new project, so you can see how it is done. We have with us today Martha Bile, a faculty research scholar at the Ravesen Center on Aging at Fordham University, right across where I live.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Very good. But she is also the International Association of Gerontology and Geriatrics, UN rep. She's been so for 14 years. Now, I'm going to point something out about this. I also told you that Cynthia Stewart was a UN rep. Katie Weiss is also a UN representative for the Global Aging Network and is currently serving as our treasurer at the NGO Committee on Aging. And, of course, Martha is the chair of our subcommittee. What I want to point out is the three of them are seeped in their topic. They know aging. And the other thing I want to point out is they don't know newsletters. They've never, ever made a business of publishing a newsletter. So I'm pointing this out only to tell you, one, whoever is on your team has to know your mission and your topic. Don't go and spend money hiring somebody else who's going to tell you that they put newsletters together. Forget it. And number two, don't be afraid that you're not in the newsletter business. You don't have to be. So here is the two takeaways. One, you do not have to pick somebody who knows how to do a newsletter. Two, you need to pick somebody who knows your topic and your mission. Now, with your 360 degree view, Martha, as the chair of the subcommittee, you made certain decisions. One of them was how you were going to select content. Tell us about that.
Okay, well, because the focus of our whole effort is aging at the UN and advocacy for the rights and inclusion of older persons in policymaking at the UN. So we start with that, and then went to our audience, which is mainly our mailing list of about 1,800 people at this point, who are already affiliated with an NGO that has an interest in aging, or other people who are not part of NGOs but who might be encouraged to join our advocacy efforts. So starting with our focus, we had to get clear about that, and then think about what person power we had to do something with this. We first kind of grandiosely thought we'd put out a monthly newsletter, and then we realized our volunteer effort, our small volunteer group, couldn't do that. So we settled on having essentially a quarterly newsletter that will line up with the major UN commissions and working groups that Cynthia had mentioned, the Commission on Social Development, the one on women, the one on open-ended working group on aging, World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, and the UN International Day of Older Persons. And while we have calendars as part of our newsletter that lets people know when those are coming up, our main contribution is to give people some substantive background ahead of those UN meetings about the issues. So, for example, our current newsletter, which came out a couple of weeks ago, just before the Commission on Social Development, we had two major pieces about the full and productive employment and how that has to include older persons. And that was actually full and productive employment was part of the Commission on Social Development. And we consider that all of our newsletters and all of our committee's efforts is whatever's happening at the UN, we have to say, in essence, don't forget the older people.
Right. So your message is constantly getting out. Now, as you're talking about this, I think the listeners are saying, who in my team is going to do this? How do I get somebody to step up to the plate? Because at this time, your newsletter does not have outside writers, although that's developing. Mm-hmm. The people on the committee are the writers, and people did step up to the plate. So
yes,
tell us a little bit what you would say to a chair to say to their group with regard to that.
Well, you have to look at the talent you have in your core group, because they're going to be the people that are most committed to working on it. We have started to invite some outside columnists, if you will. But, you know, they're less committed. And so if we want to be sure to have something in each of the issues, we rely on our two major substantive writers. One has been Maud Abu, and then Adrian, you have been a wonderful writer for us. And so we start with them, and we have regular meetings of our monthly meetings, pretty much, of our communications group. And we talk about the topics we're going to address and who can address them. And we line up a commitment from at least our core members to write a piece. And we give them a deadline.
Yes, very important. The by when. By when.
Yeah, the by when, which we have figured is about 2 weeks before we actually want to publish it, because we have a three-step editorial process in which, Adrian, you have been reviewing it for content and consistency, and maybe putting in headlines and the kind of thing that pulls it together as a content piece.
Right.
And we also always add in an introduction from the chair, from Cynthia. That's always a piece that's there. And we have calendar and catch-up pieces, but our main substantive pieces is a deeper dive into the topic that's coming up at the UN and what you, Adrian, have called words trending, which is other kind of interesting background information to know about the topic that's coming up.
Yeah, and I want to point out here that, first of all, this is a very particular kind of newsletter, and that is almost like a journal. Now I want to introduce you to Katie Rice, and she is the UN representative for the Global Aging Network, and she's currently serving as our treasurer of the NGO Committee on Aging New York. And as a philosophy major, we used to get this old riddle, you all know it, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody sees it or hears it, did it really fall? Well, I don't know the answer, but what I do know is if you publish a newsletter and nobody reads it, it's not a newsletter. And it's Katie who actually takes these disparate elements, puts them together in a format, very important, the same exact format every time so people know what to expect, and then she disseminates it. So, Katie, thanks for being with us today.
A pleasure.
And let's look at that. What do you do? I don't think you ever dreamed you'd be a newsletter for techie when you woke up in the morning that day.
Yeah, I never did. I didn't think I'd be a newsletter guru or whatever, and I didn't think I'd be a technologist, and I didn't think I'd be in publishing. So here we are. As treasurer, I do manage our email list, and that kind of puts me in the middle of this. We use one of the standard email programs. We use MailerLite. There's MailChimp. There's a number of other programs. And that's what we use to disseminate and distribute our newsletter. So it gets out to our 1,700 or so email addresses on our list. And with that approach, you don't need to be a technologist. You don't need to be a designer. They have built-in tools that will take you where you need to be.
And one of the things people want to know is, because after all, this is a segment we call What's Working, which is it working? Now, for Cynthia, it's working. She has something to show. It's impressive and so on. But who's reading it? Now, you deal with the statistics of open rates. Tell us how you discover who opens it and what they're reading.
Yeah, well, within these mail programs, once you have assembled your newsletter and sent it out to your list, you get standard statistics. They generally tell you how many people opened the email and how many people clicked on any of the hyperlinks that you included within the body of the newsletter. Hyperlinks are, of course, the modern version of footnotes. And so you get those basic statistics.
With every one of our panelists, I'm going to ask this question. If you knew then what you know now, what would you tell somebody to avoid mistakes or to improve things faster or to be more efficient with regard to your team requirements of formatting, making this into a send-outable, an emailable, a printable newsletter?
I think the answer is keep it as simple as you can. And we had some guidance early on setting up a template for the newsletter with the right fonts and the right spacing and a simple white background with dark print and a good size font. And that makes the assembly of the newsletter easier. It means that it's easier to read when it gets out to the recipients. And we did it with an idea of being aware that many of our email recipients and members might be using screen enhancers or be visually impaired and using an audio transcriber. And so the simpler you keep it, you don't need fancy graphics. It doesn't have to be multiple columns or all gussied up. The simple approach works really well. And that was something that we simplified after the first issue or two. And it was a big help as we moved forward.
Big success. Now, Martha, can we get you on again? Because I'm going to ask you a very similar question about.
I think I'm on.
Yeah, you are. You're sounding okay. Great. So if you knew then what you know now, and then I'm going to give you a follow-up question. If you knew then what you know now to simplify, make it faster, easier, more powerful, what would it have been?
Well, one is to recognize that less is more. We at least our very good writers could turn out very long pieces, and attention span is short. So we're trying to, we've limited it now to 1500 words for a piece, but even that is rather long, and we often have to break it up into two articles or something like that. And I have to stay on top of deadlines, reminders. That's probably the main job of the process editor like me. We've talked about how we should probably have a style manual where we agree on the format and what's in the template and how we're going to address the names of organizations and all the little technical things. And we actually have someone who checks all those things.
Yes.
And that makes it smoother. But it doesn't have to be an extra person. If there was almost something like a style manual so that everybody was following all the rules and templates from the start.
Yes, and that's also very useful for those of you listening to this, thinking that you're not going to have in-house writers, that you're going to only have people from outside. You create a style manual. There's 100 Google templates for that, by the way. It'll take you 2 seconds, and they're free. And you can post that on your call for articles, and everybody who is writing for you will follow that style. And the last thing I want to ask you, Martha, and by the way, we're going to have a young lady on who is our promotional helper, our social media helper. Tell us about that, because we didn't have that and we discovered it was important.
And one of the things, Adrian, that we hope to do that we haven't figured out technically how to do is to be able to take clips of our newsletter, of a particular letter, and post it on social media. We can post our whole newsletter on social media, but that's unlikely to get people who are ripping through social media to really go through it. But if we could highlight a particular article, technically we're working on that.
Right. And we do. We are able to do that on LinkedIn, and we are able to do that on Facebook by inputting the entire article. But we can't give anybody a link. And that is one of the things, if we knew then, we would wish we knew at that point, because we would have set it up that way. But we will be doing that. And that's my last takeaway. Walk before you run. Mm-hmm. Get it started and then make it happen. Now, I want to bring Cynthia back, and perhaps you have most insight as to that question. What would you might have done differently or better? Or what do you think has been the highlight where we really nailed it?
I think the key to any committee and its subcommittees is involvement of its membership. And everybody has different gifts and skills. And I think if COVID taught us anything, it's that people can do a whole lot from their homes that they didn't think they could do before and are willing to give back. And I think if we really, we're about making sure everyone recognizes that older people should not be left behind. That's in the preamble for the Agenda 2030 Sustainable Development Goals. Well, ask people what they might have an interest in doing and then recruit them to work in that area. And as Martha has found, great skills exist within the committee and have been recruited to that subcommittee. And it's working beautifully, but as both of them have said, it's really not rocket science. Right. You're writing to your audience.
Exactly. And you know that for those of you who are interested in enhancing your volunteer numbers, this is a place where a lot of people like to volunteer. They like to write, and they have no place to be published. So you can do that within your organization, not only with the folks that are on a particular committee. So this is a home run from beginning to end. So thank you all so much. This has been a huge eye-opener with great takeaways. And now, news you can use. On April 3rd to 6th, attend the 13th Open-Ended Working Group on Aging to further the purpose of strengthening the protection of human rights for older persons. Find details at social.un.org. And then on April 20th, join the Civil Society Town Hall for a discussion to push for the acceleration of progress of the Sustainable Development Goals. Visit UN.org and look for the Town Hall. And today I am so thrilled to welcome someone who I consider to be a friend, even though we met very briefly in Argentina. But it was such a pleasure, and I could not wait to introduce her to you, to everybody who is listening, and of course, to talk to her again. Her name is Graciela Yanofsky. She is the founder, the CEO, the president of FANCV. Now, what does that stand for? It stands for Fundación, Foundation Argentina, Argentina, a las Naciones, for the Nations, Camino a la Verdad, to be on the path of truth. This has been one of the most successful NGOs in the world, with a huge breadth of purpose and mission. Profundo cambio cultural y sistémico, profound change in culture and systems. So let me say hello to Graciela, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Dran. We are working together to be more than friends, like sister for the truth. It's an honor for me to have your time to share with us. And I say hello to everybody. The most important thing that I really believe is that FANCV suggests to bring the global population closer to the understanding of the nature of the true role emerging from the charter and purpose of the spirit that conceived the UN as harmonizador of interregional development and international cooperation, whose main goal is to prioritize the common good of all the people of the world with the irrevocable prioritization of the right to pass to peace in order to strengthen our right to a better future. So in that way, we are focusing in the idea that we imperiously need to redefine the scope of the spectrum of the social, ethical, and moral responsibility of the states to protect citizenship from which its delegate authority comes from.
Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is what is working. You have a stellar program. It's important to know that FANCV, Graciela's foundation, is extremely resultful. And I believe that one of those reasons is because she focuses on the prevention of crisis, not just solutions once there is a crisis. Let's hear from Graciela.
We work together as Consigliere of the Chancellery to have an international scope of view that is related with the protection, more specifically in the culture of prevention. Because at the same time, FANCV particularly believe very, very deeply in the heart that we are in a very particular time all around the world in the situation framework, we can notice that we are very near of an international conflagration, a war. So we need very much to prepare the culture of prevention in many different aspects to protect the civil population of all around the world. So that is the reason, because we are waiting in working specifically to redefine the scope of the spectrum of social, ethical, and moral responsibility of the states to protect citizens. All these different circumstances that can have influence in their own lives. For example, if they began to have an holistic and prospective vision, they can make the application of the culture of prevention that is very important, because when you can identify risk, you can make mitigation of each of one's circumstances. And when you can understand that the mitigation can close doors that can do put your vision in risk, then you began to do, how can I express to you, like adaptation for the new circumstances. So that opened the door of the resilience. So the most important thing is to not frustrate. The young people must understand that they are living in a very particular time of transition of all the different situation, because we are passing from one cycle to another, passing from the manual systems to the technology, and it goes very, very, very quickly. So they have the opportunity to understand the importance of to protect the human rights, because in many opportunities you have the opportunity to talk about the importance of the sustainable development. But yes, there is no chance for the sustainable development if the young people don't understand the importance to protect the human rights. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights is the base of everything. Because no matter where we come from, but how far we are willing to arrive in pursuit of the achieve the truest sense of the goal that we proclaim, the justice of the true.
Now let's take an inspirational moment to hear from Graciela about her holistic view of the contribution that each one of us can make as a country, as a team, as a group, as a family, and as an individual, not through competition, but through sharing.
From that point of view, I make a big difference between group, between team, and family. The group has one objective, different priorities, different intention. The team has unity in the objective, in the priorities, but different intentions. And in the family, it's very, very different. Because when we can understand the importance to belong to a group, there is important to understand the unity of objective, priorities, and intention. And in that point of view, we are only one and we can do whatever we want, but without applying the principle of competition. We always apply the principle of complementary, because everything, everyone can learn something from the other. And perhaps we have one thing to share with other. So when we are not fighting between us, we can do many things for more people. It doesn't matter if they are migrant, refugees, homeless, indigenous people. It doesn't matter if it is Muslim, Jewish, Christian, Catholic. It doesn't matter. The most important thing is that we all belong to the humankind.
This is Adrienne Berg saying goodbye for now from on the ground. Until our next episode, see you soon.